Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, stay tuned. Coming up in just a few minutes, Powder CEO Justin Sibley in with an update on the local company, its resorts and national park concession contracts, and finally the founder of the Joseph James Morelli Legacy Foundation, Dr. Barbara Ruotsko, along with Dr. Karina Beck, Vice Provost of Montana State University, have details on the transition of the foundation to MSU. Then stay tuned for This Green Earth. Today's guests include Tricia Monteleone, talking about their work and program Plus Nature, working to shift the mindset from extractive to regenerative thinking when it comes to our oceans and the keystone species that inhabit them. Then Sarah Jo Dickens with Ecology Bridge and local mountain bike enthusiast Mike Sesney talk about an opportunity to properly help clear out noxious weeds overtaking some of our more popular mountain biking trails on Park City Mountain. All of that coming up on This Green Earth, heard every Tuesday from 9 to 10. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, an embattled Kimball Junction development is headed for a groundbreaking after the Summit County Manager approved it yesterday. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that residents have spoken out against the Dakota Pacific project for nearly 6 years.
Summit County is following a process laid out in a 2025 state law passed specifically to greenlight a mixed-use project in western Kimball Junction. County Manager Shane Scott approved the development agreement Monday afternoon and signed it with representatives from Dakota Pacific Real Estate and High Valley Transit minutes later. It allows 885 housing units, about half of them for workforce, as well as an expanded transit center, park and ride, and businesses around the Skullcandy building, which Summit County will repurpose to replace its existing library and offices. A handful of people spoke at the public hearing in Colville Monday, all of them about public opposition to the project.
I will rue the day I see the first tractor go in there. And I'm sorry that legislative action has put the county and the county council into this position.
That's Summit County resident Kathy Mears. There's a 10-day protest period for residents to appeal Scott's decision to the county council. The development agreement Scott approved closely resembles the one that the council approved in December. The council's decision is now at the center of a legal dispute over a rejected referendum petition signed by thousands of residents who sought a countywide vote on the project. A third district court hearing to determine whether the Summit County clerk was wrong to toss out about half the referendum signatures is set for August 19th. Under the new state law, Scott's approval cannot be challenged by a referendum, but referendum supporters have said they want to challenge that law's constitutionality. And although the new development agreement is now in place, shovels won't be in the ground immediately. The agreement triggers a 180-day countdown for Summit County, High Valley Transit, and Dakota Pacific to negotiate the specifics of a public-private partnership. The company's contribution to that half of the development is capped at $3.7 million. Dakota Pacific CEO Mark Stanworth said after Monday's hearing, he's excited to be moving forward. The firm originally applied for the project in 2019, after the county council adopted the Kimball Junction neighborhood plan into the wider Snyderville Basin general plan.
Notwithstanding the project changing significantly over the last 5 years, you know, certainly from an economic impact perspective, not necessarily in our favor. I think we've arrived at a very good project that is going to be a hallmark for the community and for the years to come.
During his decision, Scott said he's still hopeful to see residents benefit from the development in the future.
I think if there's anything that's living up to the Kimball Junction neighborhood plan that was adopted by the council several years ago, if there's something that lives up to that, it's this.
Still, resident Ed Rutan asked Scott to acknowledge the public opposition while explaining why he decided to approve the project. Scott told a story about growing up in St. George, leaving, and then returning to see development where his dirt bike trails used to be.
Because it's not the same place it was in 1988 when I was in high school. And that makes me sad, honestly. And I think some people might feel that way about Park City, especially those that have been here a long time.
Another resident, Robert Phillips, asked Scott to resign over what he characterized as a shady process involving backroom deals.
I am old enough to recall Elliot Richardson, the United States Attorney General during Watergate, who resigned instead of firing the special prosecutor as directed by President Nixon because it was the right thing to do rather than break his promise to the public. I would respectfully ask that you consider resigning your office rather than approve this unwanted, unethical, and immoral project.
Scott didn't think the state law passed earlier in 2025 gave him much choice. Legislators previously asked Summit County and Dakota Pacific to come to an agreement after the county sued over a 2023 state law, also aimed at facilitating the development. That lawsuit was put on pause, and in signing the development agreement Monday, the parties agreed to end it. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And one correction to that story. High Valley Transit did not sign the agreement yesterday, according to Executive Director Carolyn Rodriguez. It will be on their agenda next month. Well, Park City's tourism economy remains strong, that despite some dips in visitor spending. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more on that.
Park City Chamber President and CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff said hotel occupancy in June was up 6% year over year, while lodging rates remained flat.
The success of these summer months, particularly June, is definitely a result of a lot of the larger groups, the corporate meetings that are here in Park City.
Corporate travel spending overall is up 15% year over year, according to data from Navan, a travel management platform. Wesselhoff said additional data from July is still pending, but earlier forecasts suggested a slowdown in visitation. Numbers for the first half of 2025 suggest stability in the local tourism industry, with occupancy up 3% and rates up 2% year over year. Restaurant tax revenue is up 6% in the first 6 months of this year. However, lodging tax revenue and local tax collections are down, Wesselhoff said.
Overall, we are seeing the number of visitors staying pretty solid, but it looks like what they're spending in our community is a little bit less than what they were spending the year before. And I'm sure that's just all related to the economic indicators and the uncertainty and the tariffs and the political rhetoric in the community and international visitors. There's just a lot that's going into those spending numbers.
Wesselhoff said summer events like the Park City Extreme Cup soccer tournament and the annual Kimball Arts Festival are key to driving economic development. The Park City Chamber will hold its annual meeting for members at the Pendry Hotel on August 28th. Tickets are still available, but Wesselhoff said they expect to sell out. A link to more information can be found online at kpcw.org. The Park City Chamber is a financial supporter of KPCW. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, the Central Utah Water Conservancy District is asking Heber City residents to be mindful of their water use as a summer of hot temperatures and little rainfall continues. All of Utah is in moderate to severe drought. Reservoir levels statewide dropped by 10% on average between June and July, more than the typical 2% drop during that period. In Wasatch County, Deer Creek Reservoir is 74% full, down from 96% full in June. The Jordan L Reservoir sits at just under 90% full. It was at 97% last month. The Central Utah Water Conservancy District, which serves Heber City, recently asked residents to cut back on watering to help save resources. The district requests that locals avoid watering lawns and fields multiple times per day. It also recommends watering overnight or during cooler hours to reduce evaporation. The Water District pointed to tips from the Utah Division of Water Resources for being water wise, such as reducing water use for household chores, creating low water landscaping at home, installing water efficient appliances, and more. Heber City Manager Matt Brower said so far the city doesn't plan to implement any other restrictions. He said Heber will continue to monitor its water supply and to update its recommendations if necessary. In nearby Colville, the mayor announced July 23rd that residents must follow a schedule to water every other day and only during certain hours in response to a very severe drought. He also asked residents to avoid wasteful water use, such as washing cars or spraying down driveways. Well, days after a judge ruled in favor of the Heber Valley Temple plans, the residents who sued Wasatch County and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints say they will appeal. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has details.
4th District Judge Jennifer Mabee ruled July 23rd that Wasatch County followed the law when it approved the development agreement for an LDS temple on Center Street across from the Red Ledges neighborhood. A small group of Red Ledges residents sued the county in November 2023, and the church joined the lawsuit soon after. Attorney Robert Mansfield, representing the residents, argued the temple will only benefit certain members of the community, and the county's approval of the plans amounted to spot zoning. He also said the temple doesn't adhere to Wasatch County's general plan or laws that govern county land use. In her ruling, Mabee said those arguments don't hold up to scrutiny. She said even though the Red Ledges residents might be most directly affected by the construction, the temple can still contribute to the general welfare of the community. On Monday, Mansfield said his clients disagree with Mabee's decision. In an email, he said he filed a notice of appeal with the Utah Supreme Court. He wrote, quote, "The petitioners are not opposed to the temple itself, but are opposed to any structure which so dramatically violates the height and mass restrictions for the subject zone and otherwise contravenes the law," end quote. The temple will be built on an 18-acre site just outside the Heber city limits. It will be 88,000 square feet with a 210-foot steeple. In the statement last week, a church spokesperson said the church welcomes Mabee's decision and looks forward to beginning construction. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And Wohale, a gated resort and golf community in Colville, is in financial trouble, facing numerous lawsuits from creditors and contractors who say that Wohale has laid off nearly all its employees. KPCW's Connor Thomas has more on that.
Colville Community Development Director Don Sargent said at a July City Council meeting that Wohale has pressed pause on construction.
Still trying to sort out some things there. Not sure all the details and what's going on. I'm really not involved.
Four lawsuits filed over the past 2 months allege the golf resort community has stopped paying some of its bills to creditors and contractors. One of the suits alleges Wohale has defaulted on a multi-million dollar loan from foreign investors. It says the resort, quote, has laid off almost all employees, with the exception of a small group of employees who are supposed to be maintaining the golf course. Besides a golf course, the 5,000-acre Wohale Resort includes private backcountry terrain and luxury homes. But foreign investors claim in the July 9th lawsuit that Wohale Land Estates LLC owes them $85.4 million, including interest. They say they haven't received payments since October of last year. The loan was executed through the federal EB-5 Immigrant Investor Program, which allows investors to obtain green cards by investing in United States businesses. It's the same loan program Powder Mountain used for a previous expansion. Netflix founder Reed Hastings inherited the debt when he bought a majority stake in the Northern Utah Ski Resort in 2023. And now he also faces a multi-million dollar lawsuit from investors. The most recent lawsuit against Wohale was filed Wednesday, July 23rd, by the solar panel company Eve Solar. It says Wohale refused to pay the contractor for installing solar panels on its properties and is seeking nearly $500,000 plus interest. Construction equipment retailer ICM Solutions sued for $75,000 plus interest July 3rd. Knight Trucking sued for $119,000 plus interest June 20th. Court records show Wohale has not filed responses to any of the four lawsuits. The Office of Land Use Attorney Wade Budge, who has represented the resort in other matters, declined to comment Friday. A phone call to Wohale's mainline also rang indefinitely Friday, and an email from KPCW seeking comment from David Boyden, one of the resort's founding partners, was not returned. The lawsuits against Wohale come on the heels of another legal fight between the two other founding partners, Thomas Catone and John Kaiser. Catone sued Kaiser and his associate Matthew Galeotto for defamation in January, also alleging financial mismanagement in his lawsuit. Kaiser and Galeotto have asked 3rd District Judge Richard Mrozek to dismiss the lawsuit, and the judge is scheduled to hear the matter November 18th. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. We're in the studio now with an update from Park City-based Powder Corp. I have CEO Justin Sibley. Good morning, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you've been with Powder, I think, about 11 years now?
Correct.
Yeah, so first as, I think,
First as COO.
CFO. Yes. Stint as a co-president, now CEO. I guess maybe just what initially drew you to Powder and How do you think your vision for the company has evolved since you've taken over?
I mean, back in 2014, I had an opportunity to meet the founder, John Cumming, and his mission of inspiring people in awesome places really drew me in. I thought that was an incredible way to make a living and really get more people involved and outside and really enjoying time with friends and family. And that's something that I really love to do myself, and really everything I like to do for fun outside of work is what we do, and we offer those experiences to others.
Yeah. So what do you see as that kind of Powder's core mission in today's outdoor and adventure lifestyle industry?
Yeah, cool experiences in awesome places, and I think we're delivering on that, and we're, you know, I think you've got some you've seen we've done a little bit of portfolio management here to balance things out, but we're always looking for new things to augment that.
Yeah, so Powder, of course, owns a variety of mountain resorts and adventure experiences like Woodward. I guess, how do you differentiate your offerings in such a competitive market?
We believe in making everything the best version of itself, and I think that makes us a little bit different, on the resort side, but also on the park space. And, you know, we've got an incredible group of talented people across the portfolio, and everybody's job here is to work with the local teams and make sure that that we're delivering something that's unique to that place and what that specific place has to offer. The beauty of all of our offerings being in wild environments is that everything is different. You can't treat it the same. And so we approach every place as if it's the only one that we have. And that's what differentiates our offering relative to others.
Yeah. I mean, you're where? North America? Is that
correct?
You haven't ventured out beyond that?
Not yet.
Yeah. But looking maybe?
Maybe. You know, we'll never say never.
Yeah.
We got a lot to do here.
Yeah. So what do we have in terms of resorts or businesses?
So we have Snowbird here in Utah. We have Woodward Park City. We have Copper Mountain in Colorado and Eldora in Colorado. We have Mount Bachelor in Oregon. We have Soda Springs, Boreal, Woodward Park, or Woodward Tahoe in the Tahoe area. We have Silver Star up in British Columbia. We have Camp Woodward in Woodward, Pennsylvania, and we have another Woodward camp down in Tehachapi, California.
Okay, so certainly quite.
And we have a whitewater rafting company also in Bend, and heli skiing here, just outside of Snowbird as well.
Okay, what's the heli skiing?
Powderbirds. Yes.
Okay.
Then most recently, we have Stovepipe Wells in Death Valley National Park, and the Zion Lodge in Zion National Park.
All right. So. Talk to us a little bit about the past season. How'd it go?
It was great. That's a diverse geography that I just mentioned. Things are a little bit different everywhere. And usually we get a pretty blended season across the board. But this year, I think everything hit pretty well. I think we all know the winter seemed to come around a little bit later than we'd like this last year. But it made up for it kind of later into the spring, and in Colorado it started early and it ended late, so it was great.
Yeah. And you announced, I think it's been a year or so ago, that Powder was putting up three resorts on the market. I believe one of them sold.
So we sold Killington and Pico out in Vermont last year. We had Mount Bachelor in Oregon, Eldora, and Silver Star on the market. We've since pulled Mount Bachelor off, but we're still actively pursuing transactions with Eldora and Silver Star.
Yeah, and why that decision to sell off some of the snow resorts?
Yeah, we're trying to achieve the objectives of our shareholders and stakeholders, I think we're family owned, and there's a lot of family members. We want to make sure that everyone has optionality, but we really want to stay doing what we're doing, and this was the best way to achieve that end.
Yeah, and what's that like, the business for buying resorts? I mean, I guess I'm surprised that, Alterra or, Vail Resorts hasn't jumped on an opportunity to buy a resort.
The acquisition environment here is complex. That's all I could really say about that.
All right. And as you mentioned, Powder also started bidding on concession contracts at our national parks. As you mentioned, you've got the contract for Zion Lodge as well as Stovepipe Wells in Death Valley. Why was this a good move? I mean, certainly it adds diversity.
Yeah, it adds diversity. I will say first and foremost, I love the parks. Some of my favorite places in the world are our national parks, and I was grateful that our shareholders afforded us the opportunity to pursue something that I'm personally so passionate about. But on the business side of things, it's a great way for us to diversify the seasonality, but also growing in that area has given more opportunities for our employees. So you think we have about 80% of our employees only are employed with us during the winter, which is generally the off season for the parks, although the off seasons are shrinking in both types, both businesses. But it gives us the opportunity to move people who want to stay with us year-round and get benefits, et cetera, from a ski resort in the wintertime to a national park in the summertime, and keep them kind of with us that entire year.
All right. So they're willing to move, change locations when needed.
Yeah, that's the idea. And we, you know, when we bought that the rafting company in Bend, there were only a handful of employees that overlapped between the ski resort and the rafting company, and now I think it's most of them.
All right. And you mentioned shareholders a few times. I thought it was a privately owned company. You're not traded on the, you know, stock
we're not,
exchange.
No, we're not. We're a family company, but there's more generations now.
Okay, who are all considered shareholders.
Correct.
All right. And I guess maybe talk a little bit about the similarities between kind of the national park and the resort business.
Yeah, there's a lot of overlap, actually. You think you go to the national park, you've got lodging, you have restaurants, you have retail, you have access. Those are all things that we've been providing for decades at the ski resorts, and now we're doing it at the national parks. So, but all those businesses run very much the same.
Yeah, and any reason, particular reason that you have these two, the Zion and Death Valley?
The Park Service releases the prospectus for these kind of on a rolling basis as the contracts come up for renewal, and we have a list of what all those are, and then we pick the ones that we think make sense or that our ethos would be accretive to that place and that we can really make it something special. Obviously, you know, the parks here in Utah are high on our list as they come up because they're very close to home. And all of us are very familiar with them and passionate visitors.
Yeah, so is that becoming more competitive as well, people going after these concessions?
I don't think there's been a new entrance in the space in quite some time before us, but it's a highly competitive process for sure.
So you would look into going after others?
Correct. And we actively are. We have some bids that we've made that we're waiting to hear back on, and we've got bids that we're working on for contracts that are coming up for renewal.
All right. Let's see. And in terms of acquiring resorts, I mean, are there additional acquisitions or partnerships that you would look forward to building the company? Or do you feel like you're big enough?
I think we're big enough on the ski side. We have a great partnership with Alterra, as you mountain company on the Icon Pass. And, you know, as we're sort of divesting some of these other resorts, it's not in our mission really to be acquiring new ones, but, you know, never say never. You know, things happen.
All right. Let's see. Powder, of course, founded in 1994 here in Park City, you know, in business here for more than 30 years now. Tell us what the community means here. I mean, this is kind of your base for Powder.
Yeah, a lot of our employees here in the office live here in Park City, and then now we've got Woodward Park City, which is a you know, kind of a jewel in our portfolio and a lot of fun and something that we're all very proud of. You can see it. The parking lot's is full, and there's people out there really enjoying what we have to offer. And it's, and you know, personally, it's great for me to see kids. My boys are 8 and 10, and they spend a lot of time over there.
Yeah. Anything new going to happen at Woodward?
We're in full swing right now. You know, we've got all of our camps going, and it's, you know, that's a great experience. We just partnered with the X Games when they came to Salt Lake City a couple weeks ago and had a great activation there and really exposed a lot of people to that lifestyle and sport, and we were really excited about that.
Yeah, so I mean, would you look at building more Woodwards somewhere else? I think because you own the brand, yeah?
We do, yes, and we are looking for other locations for it. We're very selective.
Yeah, and this is, right? I mean, this is a year-round business because of both the indoor and outdoor opportunities.
It is, yes.
That's probably the safest of all, right?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Sustainability has always been a concern of the of Powder Corp, especially now we're looking at, you know, climate change, right? So in terms of what Powder looks at its top environmental priorities, I mean, what would you list those as?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to point out that our founder and chairman, John Cumming, was he we've had a full-time executive dedicated to sustainability and environmental concerns since the early 2000s, you know, kind of way before most companies had them. And going back to our mission of making, you know, each place the best version of itself, like, we don't believe that there's any one-size-fits-all solution. You know, the solar installation that we're going to be opening here next month in down in Death Valley, where it's sunny 364 and a half days a year, makes a lot of sense. But that maybe at another place where we don't have that, it's less relevant. So we're bringing online an advanced wood energy facility up at Mount Bachelor in partnership with the Forest Service and a lot of other stakeholders to take the slash piles out of the National Forest where they're managing for wildfires. We're going to take all that material, burn it in a special facility, so the carbon off, so the, you know, the what's going into the atmosphere is controlled, and we're going to use that instead of propane to heat the lodges in the wintertime. And I think that's an opportunity that's unique to that place that hopefully will catch on elsewhere. But that's really what we do, is we look at each location, what makes the most sense from an air quality, from a water quality, from a waste diversion standpoint, and we go after what we feel we can do with our resources and make the biggest impact in that area.
Yeah. So tell me more about what you've got going on at Death Valley. Just a huge solar farm, you said?
We did, yeah. So we won that concession back about a year and a half ago, and it's taken, these projects take some time, and I don't recall offhand exactly how many kilowatts that we're putting out there, but it's enough to run what we have going on. And more importantly, you know, the power goes out there, you don't have air conditioning, it's not great.
Yeah.
And this is a way for us to mitigate that concern and make sure we've got like really great clean renewable power in a place that's fairly remote.
And we're certainly seeing now a generational shift in outdoor recreation. How is powder appealing, do you think, to the younger outdoor enthusiasts?
Well, the next wave of enthusiasts definitely are experience focused, which is right in our wheelhouse. That's great on the ski resort side of things. That's why, you know, we originally bought Woodward, was to bring that sort of magic around the youth culture into the ski arena, where there used to be more of a demographic issue than there is today, and that's been hugely successful. We've seen the demographic shift coming, you know, moving back down in the age categories, and so Woodward's been really successful with that. On the national park side, I think just the way you communicate with guests and the way you communicate about the park using, you know, language that just appeals more broadly, and meeting people where they are, you know, whether that's TikTok or Instagram or, you know, wherever the kids are, that's where we try to be, and in language that resonates with them.
Yeah, and back to kind of Snowbird, of course, that's your mountain jewel, I think, here in Utah. What's the latest on that? I mean, I know you replaced the tram. Any other improvements that you're making?
We have a couple of really exciting things. First and foremost, we've expanded the Oktoberfest offering. You know, I think Oktoberfest is starting here, I believe on August 9th. We've expanded a new large tent that kind of helped disperse people a little bit more, and then the vendor village is gonna come deeper to the resort. This will be, you know, more offerings for people to enjoy up there. And then we're under construction with a new Mid-Mountain Lodge and restaurant that replaced the Midgad restaurant that's been there, you know, since the beginning, and it was time. And that'll be coming online hopefully around Christmas this year. That's really exciting. It's a stunning, stunning building. You should check it out if you get an opportunity.
Yeah, so you leveled the other one, huh?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. And then with congestion of Little Cottonwood Canyon, I mean, how has the parking situation worked for you guys?
You know, parking up there is a challenge. I think we're actively working with UDOT to explore various solutions on that, but that's an ongoing concern.
Yeah, at this point, you're not doing reservations?
We're not.
But maybe considering them? Because we've seen it some success, certainly here.
Yeah, we'll see. We're always exploring things. I think, you know, the situation, Snowbird's unique. We've got a percentage of our parking that is only released by UDOT, you know, the night before. And so that's not real conducive to the reservation system, but it's a practical reality that we're all, you know, we're all working with, and we got to deal with it together.
Okay. Anything else, Justin, you want to mention?
I think just again, we've got, you know, a couple weeks left of the camp season at Woodward Park City. So, you know, anybody who's listening, who's got kids, this is it's a great opportunity and a great experience for them. And otherwise, enjoy Oktoberfest. And thanks for having me, Leslie. Appreciate it.
Well, great to see you. It's been a while. Good morning. Well, a local business wrapped up Weirdfest on Saturday night. It's a four-day event where hairstylists and customers discuss the company's business ethics and environmental initiatives, which in turn help raise funds for local and national nonprofit organizations. Colton King was founded in 2016 by former salon owner and stylist Jared Briggs, along with one of his longtime hair clients, marketing and advertising professional Robin Whitney. Whitney says the company's goal is to redefine hair and skin business through natural formulations and an anti-status quo business plan. Colton King came to be after Briggs experienced crippling depression and low hormone levels. He says he linked his medical issues to BPA and phthalate exposure, both types of chemicals found in plastics, which health experts say can be endocrine disruptors, meaning they can interfere with the body's hormone system. This inspired him to formulate environmentally free products.
And I knew right then, because of what a terrible experience I had, that I would never want to create something in a product that would do that to another human being. I felt like that was actually sociopathic, to try and make money by saving a buck instead of using, you know, beautiful essential oils to use a synthetic fragrance that would, you know, have caused endocrine disruption.
Briggs credits Robin Whitney and her husband Jim for executing his original vision of a purpose-driven company and brought them on as partners in the business. Robin also serves as CEO of Colton King. The brand's marketing strategy relies on word of mouth and clear communication of the company's values without spending money on advertising or influencers. Whitney says the company avoids large retailers and about 60% of their business is direct to consumer. The company's manifesto rejects traditional salon product lines and instead delivers sustainably sourced, toxic-free ingredients.
We are totally all about supporting small business, so that means we support independent stylists. We don't sell on Amazon or at any retail location with more than 20 outlets, because our idea is, why can't the best products in the world be sold at the smallest stores in the world? We have the cleanest ingredient deck you can possibly imagine. We are absolutely pristine.
The business aims to put planet over profit, donating 1% of its gross sales to environmental nonprofits each year.
All the people here at this event are completely like-minded people who are looking to make the world a better place and started and believing that maybe some of the ideals that we're doing are a part of what can help that. Our tagline is not great hair. Our tagline is transform your thinking, cause the possibilities. Because that's what we think people do with the things they buy. You can change the world with the things you buy.
Whitney says they've made contributions to several environmental organizations over the years, including Hawkwatch International, Swanna Preserve and Eco Center, Recycle Utah, and Green Amendments for the Generations. As part of Weirdfest, stylists come to Park City on their own dime for education, self-care, and celebration. Attendees could join in full-day workshops, including haircutting and styling sessions, as well as guided personal development experiences. The signature gala on Saturday night was an invitation-only warehouse party with live food, music and drink, as well as aerial dancers, jugglers, and aura photography. Good morning. Well, 11 years ago, the family of Joe Morelli put together the Joseph James Legacy Foundation after the tragic death of their son and brother. Today, that legacy is being passed on by the family to Montana State University. On the phone to explain, I have Joe's mom, Dr. Barbara Worotsko, the founder and director of the foundation, along with Dr. Karina Beck, the vice provost of Montana State University. Good morning, ladies. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So, Barbara, let's have you start and maybe just tell us how this all came to be.
So, thanks. So, as you mentioned, so 11 years ago, Joseph was a local Park City student. We've been in Park City now for 15 years. He was at Montana State, actually, as a junior in mechanical engineering, and he had been diagnosed with dyslexia late. He was diagnosed as a high school back when we were living in New York. And as you mentioned, he was killed in a car crash and everyone wanted to help. So not knowing, you know, sort of where to turn and what to do, a friend said, well, why don't you start a scholarship? And what started as awarding $5,000 to two students, we had eight applicants that first year, we've now grown and it'll be close to $900,000 that we've given to students around the country. And what we really did was we saw the need. You know, when Joseph was diagnosed, we had to hire lawyers, we had to work with the school system, we had to get advocates, we had to have testing done, and it's costly and very emotionally draining as well. And we thought there had to be other students who perhaps were struggling and families that were struggling like we had with Joseph, and could we provide some support? And clearly there's a huge unmet need. Each year we get about 350 applicants, a lot of kids here in Utah, Park City, but also nationwide.
Yeah. So why was it time to hand this over?
That's a great question. You know, we had been so successful, and the volume of applicants and the management, and we really started as a grassroots effort. So we had reached the point where all volunteers, I have a huge group of volunteers that were helping me review applicants, managing finances, sending out, you know, 80, 85 checks around the country to various colleges. And it got to the point where we said, okay, we need the infrastructure. So do we hire a full-time executive director, or do we find a organization or university with a like-minded approach that we could actually work with and would want to take this on and even grow it?
Yeah. So, Karina, why was this something that Montana State University wanted to accept?
Oh, thanks so much for the question and the opportunity to visit this morning. This aligns with our mission as a public land grant university. And for those on the call, if you're not familiar with a public land grant, our focus is to educate the sons and daughters of our state, regardless of background or high school GPA, ACT score. So the idea is that we want more students involved in higher education, not less. And so when we visited with Barbara and her family and we learned about their great passion for thinking about accessibility towards higher education, this amazing foundation very much aligned with our work.
Yeah. So going forward, will it only be for Montana State University students? As we mentioned, you know, Barbara says they get applicants from all over the country.
Absolutely. So, yes, at this time it will be for Montana State University students. Although for your listeners, we recruit students from every part of the United States. And so we hope this program will draw students in who are thinking about receiving a high quality education while also having supports that will make the difference for their college career and their learning.
Hmm. So any other changes you've got planned going forward besides limiting it to this university?
Well, in addition to our work with supporting students through scholarship programs, we plan to hire a learning strategist that will help us support a broader base of students. I think with this work, there's a natural curiosity for all institutions to think about how do they become better. And one thing that we've learned as we've worked with other institutions across the United States is we share this information. And we've learned from other institutions, and there's some concentric circles that I'm sure will happen from this. We'll grow this out as we share what we've learned and best practices. And so I see this opportunity as being very generative.
Yeah, so you mentioned this learning strategist. What would this employee do?
We've had a learning strategist in our office previously, and they have been fundamental for helping students with learning differences, certainly dyslexia, as we think about the work of the Morelli family. And so they will help students decode college learning, identify methods for executive functioning to include time management and making choices, some confidence development, making the transition from high school to college. Sometimes students work to think about how can they discover their purpose and belonging. And sometimes associated with that is confidence development. So this person will work with them on competence development and agency development. The idea that it's not just learning how to take a test, but how to prepare to take a test, how to follow through with solid studying strategies, both reviewing and previewing information, working with faculty and meeting with tutors. So there's a whole cadre of services that this position will support. We do it for all students, but this individual will very much focus on students that have learning differences to include, and especially dyslexia.
All right. And it sounds like you're also hoping to develop a student mentoring program for students with dyslexia. Tell me about that.
We've learned at MSU that students who are mentored by their peers do better. And it goes back to that natural decoding process. And so when you learn from an adult, of course that matters, but learning from a peer, it just seems to translate and stick. And so over time, we hope to develop a peer-to-peer mentoring program. And this will be something that needs to be student-led, working with experts, working with others to help them develop some best practices. But there's tremendous opportunity here, and we're excited to be on the leading edge.
All right. Barbara,
Leslie, go ahead. Go ahead. I was just going to chime in because I think that's what really resonated with us is that, as I always say, you know, over the last 11 years, what we've learned is it's not the finances that really made the difference. It was the community and it was the mentoring. And also the other thing that we found, having worked with now various colleges and universities across, we've got kids in 44 states, is the disparity. So many universities and colleges are not set up to support these kids, which is where we stepped in. And I think, you know, meeting Karina and with her vision of what is needed and the potential here to really make an improvement at a state university level was just incredible. So it really is that sort of collaboration and that partnership of what we learned and what we could share and how we could do this together.
All right. Well, it sounds like you've been able to raise about $80,000 a year over, you know, on average for the last 11 years. How have you done that, Barbara?
Word of mouth. Having you put me on KPCW. And, you know, just visibility. And I think what's really happened too is it resonates with people and our kids. You know, the kids, when they stand up on stage at our celebration event or they send an email and the gratitude they express and the parents, you know, it's not just the kids, it's the parents. These parents are like deers in a headlight with their kids going off to college. And as you can imagine, it's, you know, it's hard sending your child off to college and trying to understand and navigate the system. But on top of that, a student with learning challenges, and then you're trying to figure out the testing and the accommodations and the support system. So yeah, the parents have been really appreciative as well.
All right. You are planning one final fundraising event, August 10th. So tell us when and where this will be.
Yes. Yeah, so this year it's going to be on a Sunday. Usually we have it on Saturday. It's going to be August 10th. It's going to start at 4 o'clock at the shed up over in Promontory. Everyone's welcome. It's free. The MSU staff is coming down. Karina has graciously agreed to be our keynote speaker, so you'll meet her and some of her staff. We actually have several MSU students, some from Park City, actually, who are at MSU now, who have been scholarship awardees. And it's free food, drink, music. We've got a great band. There'll be dancing. So yeah, it should be, it's going to be bittersweet. It's going to be really hard, but it'll be fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, free, but I think you're hoping for donations at the same time.
Of course. Yeah. You know, I think the donations definitely will continue to help our kids this year. We do have another 80 students that are going to be in this academic year. And then the idea is really to grow the foundation to the point where when it does get turned over and the legacy gets turned over to MSU, it's in an endowed state. So there'll be Joseph James Morelli scholars in perpetuity.
Yeah. So what kind of endowment do you think you can hand over?
I don't know. A few hundred thousand dollars would be really nice.
Yeah, yeah. So this actually, the current foundation dissolves, what, at the end of the year?
Yep, it dissolves, yep.
Okay, yes. and then what happens?
Then it gets turned over to MSU and Karina, I guess, you guys?
It does, but I want to say, you know, with great gravity and respect, we understand what Barbara and her family and friends and community have done to honor Joseph, and we are so honored to carry that torch.
So you'll continue, or MSU will continue to fundraise then?
We will. We will.
Okay.
And very importantly, what we will do is support students so they can reach their full potential.
All right. Barbara, if people are interested in joining you on the 10th, again, for this final celebration, do they need to register at all just to let you know how many people are coming? Or?
Yes, because we will have food and drink. Yes, so you can go to the Morelli.foundation website. And if you scroll on the bottom, there's a calendar. And I also did list this event on the KPCW website.
Okay. All right. Anything else, ladies, that you'd like to mention about what's happening here?
No, I think it's like I said, I never in my wildest dreams, any of us, I think our volunteers, our family, could have imagined. And it's really because of all the support and the donations and the belief in these kids.
Okay. All right. Dr. Barbara Worotsko, along with Dr. Karina Beck, Vice Provost of Montana State University. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie. Thanks. Bye.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.